I love ITC because I was there at their birth. I was there from the beginning. And I couldn't have asked for ITC to turn out to be a better company than they are. In every community that they're in, they are wonderful members of the community. They got a tough job. They got to keep the grid open. They got to keep the power going. And, people want the power and need the power. And I don't know what we would do without what ITC has done in its birth and in its many years of existence now. But we were there at the beginning, and we're so happy to be there. In fact, most recently, our friend Linda Apsey, who was there from the beginning, handed off the crown of power. The torch was passed. You fill in your own thing here. To Krista Tanner, the president and CEO, and things are going very well under her leadership now. So it's great to have them here. It's great to have them in Newaygo and Newaygo County. And they're just very supportive of everything. And I have to tell you, this first visit to the Heritage Museum of Newaygo County, and this is a fabulous museum. And I didn't just say that because the museum executive director, Stephen Ratke, just walked in. I was starting to say that before he just walked in. So we're looking forward to talking to him in just a couple of minutes. It is, of course, Cinco de Mayo. Now, we've got the team, the team, the team. Mike Parsons, executive producer, Danielle Mason, queen of the switches, Rich Luzinski, Renee Vitale, helping us out here. Ray Templin running the controls on location. Ava is overseeing everything, coordinates. Well, she pays the bills. That I'll get right to the point. She pays the bills. So we'll have our relentless positive radio. But I'm wondering if my team is going to do anything special for Cinco de Mayo, the annual reminder that America loves a good party. I mean, we celebrate it more than they do in Mexico.
Yeah, I think you should do something because it's not every day that Cinco de Mayo lines up with Taco Tuesday. So you should at least get some tacos today.
All right, that's it. I was wondering what we might have for lunch. It's tacos, and they're
Settled.
not on me. Oh, what's that? So what are you going anywhere? Are you doing anything? Danielle, you're a party girl. Are you doing anything?
No, I'm going to Pilates. It's gospel Pilates too, so it's not even a Cinco de Mayo Pilates class.
You know,
Excuse
it's
me.
good for the
Excuse
body
me.
and the
Wait, wait,
soul.
wait, 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 Mike. It's gospel Pilates?
Yeah, I don't really know what that means. This is my first one.
It's the first time I've ever heard of it, and I'm around a lot. I hear a lot of things.
You know, bodies by Wade, they like to keep it interesting.
Well, good for you.
Thanks.
I just never heard of bodies. Oh no, whatever you said just now. But Pilates, gospel Pilates, is a new one on me, and more power to you and those that spread the word.
Well, and you know what, Paul? They're
Amen. Yes.
They're avoiding both tacos and temptation today, so
I
two
guess
birds with one
so.
stone.
There's not going to be a lot of tequila at
No.
this event.
Maybe some
I'm just
communion
guessing.
wine.
I have to tell you, as an altar boy, I never did take a sip of the communion wine. I was a good little altar boy.
Good for you.
But I always got the impression that for some priests, it was a really cheap wine, and for other priests, it was probably a pretty good wine. And they downed it all. They finished that little cruset or cruet or whatever that thing was called we had to put out in front of them.
The chalice.
The chalice, well, we
Yes.
didn't fool with the chalice. We couldn't touch the chalice. And God forbid a host hit the floor. But if it wasn't consecrated yet, it was just bread,
Right.
pressed bread. So anyway, it's amazing what Bible Pilates road you will follow when you open that door.
Didn't have
Let's
that on my
close.
Cinco de Mayo bingo card.
No, neither did I. Let's close that door now. What else is going on? I heard the president in Kevin Dietz's show like a million times. Did something happen? We've been on the road, so we don't know.
Not that I know of.
He
Right
must
now,
have spoken this morning or something.
right now, he's signing something to bring back the presidential fitness test. Remember, you would take that in jail. I mean, I would never do very
Yes.
well, but.
Yeah, right up there with the pass, punt, and kick, or kick, pass, and punt, or whatever the hell it was called. I was really bad at that, too.
Yeah, so I didn't know that went away, but it's been a while since I've been in school, but I guess he's bringing it back.
Well, you know, we do have a problem with good health in this country. Let's face it.
Right.
We do have a problem. There's a lot of food that never should have been in schools that I think they got rid of it. Maybe they did. You know, vending machines, things like that. You know, there are a lot of changes in our world. I remember when I went with my father to his doctor and tried to get the doctor to talk my dad out of smoking cigarettes. Mm. And the doctor took a puff on his cigarette and said, I'll do what I can.
Right.
And I'm not making that up. In his office. He was smoking a cigarette. He was the doctor.
I think I saw some old ads where it says like 4 out of 5 doctors prefer smoking Marlboro Reds or something.
Yes. They actually sold a bill of goods to people like my late father and told him it was good for him.
Yeah.
Back then. It's sad. But anyway, it's taken a long time because there's a lot of money behind all those things, but
right.
It's coming around. I couldn't sleep. What a surprise. And I'm looking at pictures on my phone of people at the Met Gala.
Mm.
I'm going to bet neither one of you have done that today.
Oh, I have. I went on
a
deep dive yesterday.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. The red carpet, the whole deal.
Oh, yeah.
So what did you think of some of those outfits that I can't imagine any woman I know being caught in them?
Well, as always, some of them are a little bit ridiculous and they don't make any sense. And also, if I know one thing from the Kardashians, the Met Gala is a huge deal and you're supposed to not be able to breathe.
Functionality is not a priority.
No, not on that
day. I saw two of the Kardashians and I wouldn't have been able, I couldn't tell it was them.
Yep, that's what happens.
You know, they had like stuff all over their face. Somebody, Katy Perry or somebody, came out with her face completely covered.
Yeah, she's like
she looked like a mummy or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
She looked like she was going to go fencing.
Yeah, fencing or in a spaceship or something. I don't know.
Yeah, what's the point if nobody knows who you are?
Right.
Well, they all said it's Katy Perry. Okay, well, anyway. Happy Met Gala. I have not seen The Devil Wears Prada 2 or whatever they call it, but I think Dave Rieger said it was pretty good. He liked it. Our review last Friday. I believe he said it was good. I think I have to see the first one from start to stop to then watch the second one.
Right. You don't want to be lost.
I don't want to be lost. And, of course, if I put that on my list, it'll be right there at about 97th on my list of things to do. Here's what we're doing today. We're celebrating the Heritage Museum of Newaygo County, presented by our friends at ITC for the Greater Grid. We continue in a extended edition of Focus. Thank you, Kevin Dietz. We'll be here till 2, and I hope you will be too on WJR. Well, it's a pleasure to be here, and I'm not kidding you. If you get a chance to see the Heritage Museum of Newaygo County, you're in for a thrill. The gentleman who's doing such a great job with this museum is Stephen Ratke. He's the executive director. And I'm not saying this just because you're here sitting next to me and you could probably hurt me. But I'm saying it, like I said it when we walked in the door, I was taken aback at how fabulous this place is.
Well, thank you. That's nice to hear.
Well, I hope it's still nice to hear.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, tell me about the history of the Heritage Museum of Newaygo County.
Being here today is kind of a nice coincidence for us because May is our 60th anniversary of the founding of the original museum. It started as a genealogical society, and it was a museum, then it wasn't a museum, and it was a museum. It was always a genealogical society. And around 2006, the museum closed, and it stayed closed until 2011 or so. And then we had a dedicated group of volunteers that decided we really needed a museum. By 2014, we were able to acquire this building. They started a fundraising campaign. We started construction during COVID in 2020, and we opened the new facility in 2022.
And it is enjoyed by all ages. When we arrived here, there were about 50 or 60 very young kids who were clearly coming from school on a field trip or whatever, and they were having a ball.
Yeah, absolutely. That was our second grade field trip. We serve all of the kids in Newaygo County in the public school system. We're expanding outward as well into parochial and charter schools and homeschool consortiums. But our second grade program is on Pioneer Life, and that's one of our more rambunctious ones. The kids play Pioneer games. And...
Well, I will say this. When we came in, I said, oh, my, how are we going to do the show with all that noise? But it's quiet. Now they're all gone. They went on to their next stop, which I would assume was school. I don't even know.
Yeah, absolutely. They got here about 9, and they left at 11. We have another group that's coming later in the afternoon, so a bit of noise then, too.
Well, that's fabulous. I mean, you've got some major exhibits. What can my listeners on WJR, what can your patrons expect when they come here?
So we have a large gallery that holds most of our exhibits. We do some others throughout the building as well. But we have permanent exhibits on some topics that are relevant to Michigan's history.
Well, explain some of those things. I saw a little tractor in there. There's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, our first exhibit is on the Native American interactions and their culture. We worked with the Native Circle of Newaygo County to make sure that we were developing an exhibit that told a fair story for everyone. We also have an exhibit on logging, which was a major factor in the development of Newaygo County. A lot of our motifs and what have you all through the museum are kind of based on that logging heritage. We redesigned our logo at the same time we opened the building in 2022, and our new mark is based on the idea of a log mark, which is what they used when they sent the logs down the river to be able to sort them properly.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like a mark on the log that would indicate who the owner was or where they're supposed to go? Or?
Yeah, exactly. And it's a kind of an indication of human nature that we have a big collection of log rounds, which were when the logs gathered in a bend of the river or a slow spot, people would pull them off, saw off the end, and stamp them with a new mark. And then people went back 40 years later and collected the rounds with the other marks on them. We have 140 of them in our collection with all different
marks. With all this stuff stacked up like that, coming around the bend of the river, you might be able to help the president with the Strait of Hormuz. I'm just saying, he's kind of stuck there.
Right.
He's kind of got a log jam there. And maybe, well, I'm just thinking out loud. This is the home of Gerber, Newaygo County, the baby food capital of the world. And Gerber is well represented here.
Yeah, we're proud to have a mini museum, a museum within a museum on the history of Gerber. It's one of our significant industries here, and we were happy to work with their graphics design department to be able to use their motifs and their colors and their logos, which is kind of a big deal. It's sort of like using Disney. They don't
let anyone use it.
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't just let anybody. There's even a Disney University that you have to go to learn how to do Disney. I know we were owned by Disney for about 10 minutes. We are on, I assume that they're supportive of this museum.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. They come to town quite frequently. We have executives from all over the world that stop in to see our museum.
Oh, that's nice. Well, since we're on the annual Paul W. Smith Pure Michigan Tour, other than visiting this fabulous museum, the Heritage Museum of Newaygo County, presented by ITC, what are some other highlights that you might share with us for the region?
This region is famous for its outdoor activities. There's year-round activities, everything from trail hiking and tubing on the river and kayaking to snowshoeing. We have over 356 miles of river in Newaygo County.
Wow.
And there's 256 lakes.
Yikes.
A big
pure Michigan in for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. A big chunk of Newaygo County is the Manistee National Forest, which is also a big draw. A relatively new feature for Newaygo County, which draws people from all over the world, is the Dragon Trail, which is 45 miles of carefully groomed and planned trails around the Croton Reservoir.
Beautiful. Well, it is beautiful. And I have to tell you, you do drive through, at least coming from where we were coming from, and I am absolutely geographically challenged, so I have no idea. But I can tell you that it was desolate. And we kept looking at each other saying, wow, what's Fremont like and what's Newaygo County like? I hope there's activity there. And then all of a sudden, boom, here we are in a fabulous community. I mean, a really fabulous community. Now, we go around and we do this, and I'm so glad that, you were on our schedule so that we could see all of this, Stephen Ratke, as the executive director of the Heritage Museum of Newaygo County. I must tell you, we couldn't have done it without our guests, the folks who are sponsoring us, because this is the Heritage Museum of Newaygo County, presented by ITC on WJR. And the area manager, local government and community affairs, Julie Burrell, I wanted to invite her on because she might have a thing or two to add to our conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's really great to be here, and it's been amazing to hear Stephen talk about all the great things at the museum. And Stephen, I just wanted to share a little bit of an update from our team. We're obviously really happy to be able to bring all this big group here and be highlighting the museum, but we also want to present the museum today with a donation of $1,000 for additional support.
So. How about that? That's nice. Excellent. And thank goodness the host of the show at that time gets 10% of commission. I'm just kidding. I'm trying to get away with whatever I can. How about that?
Well, absolutely. Thank you so much. That's a nice surprise.
It is a nice surprise. And I thank Julie Burrell and the whole team that's here. Kelly Wozick, who's also an area manager, local government community affairs. Jim Tedder, regional manager. And Tim Wolf, an area manager. Rebecca Miller, marketing. And Catherine Harrington, communication specialist. Catherine,
yes.
You used to work at WJR.
I was an intern.
She was an intern at WJR for, I think, Ann Thomas many years ago. I sang the song, "This Girl is a Woman Now." So it was a while ago, but it still counts because WJR has been there 102 years now. Ava DeMantia informed me. I was saying we're 101, but I guess now we're 102. Everybody and everything gets older but me. All right. Thank you so very much, Stephen Ratke, for inviting us to be here. You've got a heck of a museum, the Heritage Museum of Newaygo County. Thank you to all of you ITC people, and Julie here with the check, for sponsoring us so that we could stop here. They picked where we were going to go, and we're glad you picked here.
All right. Absolutely. Thank you for having us on.
It's our pleasure as we continue in focus, and it's our Pure Michigan Tour on WJR on Cinco de Mayo. So good to be here in Newaygo County. I got a little lesson. We stayed in Fremont, but which is in Newaygo County. But now we're in Newaygo, in Newaygo County, which I can relate to because I'm originally from Monroe, in Monroe County. Are you guys following this? Everybody's following this. All right. So that's where we are right now. You know, it's great to talk about places that you know, that you love, that you've had a relationship with. You recall many years ago, I was thrilled to be doing a television show for Henry Ford Hospital called Minds of Medicine. It was a great show, and I believe in every way that we saved lives with that show. Maybe I can get to Bob Riney to maybe bring it back. But Bob Riney now worked his way up from the beginning to be the president and CEO of Henry Ford. Done a great job. Joshua Collins is my doctor there. Joshua and Summit Singla, who I've got to be seeing soon. Mary Jane Vogt, who we've known for years. These are all good people. And so when good people want to come on and talk about important topics, we open our arms and welcome them. And that's what we're doing right now with Dr. Craig Rogers, who's chair of the Department of Urology at Henry Ford Health. And we wish a happy birthday to the guest he brought along, Stan Finsilver, who is happily a prostate cancer survivor, which means he's going to have lots more birthdays. Happy birthday to you, Stan.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're very, very welcome. And Dr. Craig Rogers, it is Henry Ford Health's Stand Up for Men's Health event coming up at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle to raise awareness for prostate cancer. How are we doing in that area, Doctor? Welcome to the show. How are we doing in fighting prostate cancer?
Thanks, Paul W. Well, this is an important topic, and that's why we're using a tool, humor, to bring attention to it, because it's the number one cancer in men, number two killer of men. 300,000 people will be diagnosed just this year alone. So we need to find ways to break down barriers that make it scary for men to go in and get tested. And it's just a simple test. So that's what we're trying to get across to everyone.
Well, is it the... the PSA test, is that back in favor again? Because there was a time they stopped doing it, and it really upset me because they didn't replace it that I was aware of with any other test. Even President Biden, they stopped doing the PSA test because apparently they stopped doing it for people 70. I don't want them to ever stop doing that test on me.
Yeah, so pendulum swing. It's gone from don't do it to have a conversation with your doctor. And we recommend getting tested for men earliest in their 50s, or if there's a family history, or for African-American men who have an even higher risk to get tested in their 40s. And it is just a blood test now, just a simple test.
What he's saying without saying it is, you don't have to be ready for the digital part of the test. Okay.
Correct.
And gentlemen of a certain age know exactly what I'm talking about. So that's a nice thing to know. And Stan Finsilver, you must be thrilled with where the technology is. Tell us a little bit about your story.
So when I was just doing my general health maintenance, I did the PSA, and it showed it was high. So we took a look at it. I went and met with Dr. Rogers, and we came to the conclusion that after doing the couple of other tests, which were not invasive or any of those other kinds of things, I found that I had minor prostate cancer at the time. And we wound up surveilling it, which is you just keep an eye on it because it's so slow growing, you may never really need to do anything with it. And over a matter of a few years, it was changing a little bit. And I came to the conclusion I didn't want to be looking over my shoulder. So I had several options, and I chose to have my prostate removed, which means that whatever cancer was there was also removed.
So, good for you. Good for you.
And I've been cancer-free since. Again, some fellas, I have some friends that chose other options, and again, they're having huge success in that too. Listen, as we get older, things change, and we have to change with it. But I decided I'd rather live longer than not, and that's when I decided to have it removed.
I am so thrilled for you, and I got to tell you, Doctor, please don't take this the wrong way, Dr. Craig Rogers. Maybe there are several cancers like this, but I don't know them. But when I've had friends who have prostate cancer, I say, what are you going to do? And they say, well, the doctor gave me four choices. I go, wait a minute. What four choices? If somebody has, liver cancer or kidney cancer or whatever, do they say, well, you've got four choices? No, but what is that all about, doctor? Is it because of the lifestyle and the changes that might happen that some people will say, well, I'm going to roll the dice. I may not live as long, but I'll still function the way I want to function as a man.
Yeah, I mean, with these choices, isn't it a good thing to have options where first men can decide, do I even need to treat or not, like Stan did, right? For a while, he was able to safely monitor it. And then when it declared itself, he was able to say, all right, I want to treat it, but then you can treat it different ways. And the technology keeps improving. Will it be a surgical option, a radiation option, an ablative option where you can tailor it, personalize it to that patient? Bottom line, if it's caught early, it's curable, like Stan's is.
Correct. And it's best, I'm not a doctor and I'm not challenging you, but I always think if there's cancer in your body, getting it out of your body as quickly as you can is a good thing. And sadly, I've watched the thing you mentioned, Stan, about, I think they used to call it waitful watching, or what was it called, doctor? Watchful waiting.
Active surveillance. Yeah.
And then I would watch the man then be told, oh yeah, it spread to your bones and there's nothing we can do. That's not an option in my world, but that's, you guys you're doing better than it's ever been done in fighting prostate cancer. I honestly didn't think prostate cancer would be around my entire life, or breast cancer for that matter. I really thought that we were going to get a grip on those things and end them. And I don't know, do you think we're at all close to that, well, Dr. Rogers?
We're getting there. That's the purpose of events like this, right? To get the public and men aware for something that's scary to get tested. But if men get tested, they can find it early. And that's how we eradicate it, by people taking initiative, but all through, obviously, the science behind it. Even this event, The proceeds, the $25 entry, goes to our prostate cancer fund, and that's how we make innovations and discoveries to try to beat this disease.
Well, you are making a difference in a very big way, and we appreciate that. Stand Up for Men's Health, a live stand-up comedy event at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle in Royal Oak this Thursday, in just a couple of days, May 7th, using humor to get people talking about this topic that many of us avoid, and we should not. And there will also be free on-site PSA blood screenings. I wish I could get there. This idea was inspired by you, Stan, a prostate cancer survivor and a patient of Dr. Craig Rogers, and God bless you both. Remember, it's May 7th. Doors open at 5:30. Show starts at 7 at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle. Thank you, Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle, for doing this again. 310 South Troy Street in Royal Oak. Tickets just $25. You can purchase them in advance or at the door. And all of the proceeds go to the Henry Ford Prostate Cancer Fund. Dr. Craig Rogers, God bless you for the work that you do here and the life-saving that we now have right here in front of us on his birthday, Stan Finsilver. Congratulations to you, Stan.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Paul W.
All right, guys. I hope that you'll be able to go to Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle this Thursday. It's a good thing, and especially since they're going to be doing a prostate cancer screening and do the PSA test, which is something that I've always felt strongly about, even when they tried to do away with it and insurance companies were trying to do away with it. Now it's back in favor, apparently, and that's a good thing. It only works if you get it. And I'm trying to tell myself that, too, because I'm a little late in getting to my doctor and doing all the things I am supposed to do. So if you run into Dr. Joshua Collins, tell him to call and bug Paul W. Smith to come in for a physical. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. We continue in Focus at 11:43 on WJR. Well, I'm told, actually, that we are indeed live streaming on YouTube and on whatever other places. But, oh, there I see it now. Yeah, okay, well, we're live streaming. There you go. Oh, and it even writes what I'm saying. This is amazing technology. Soon it'll be available to everyone. Oh, it is already available to everyone? Yeah, okay. I'm the last one to get the technology. I am so happy to say hi to Jenna Smolligan, Director of Community Investment, the Fremont Area Community Foundation. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well.
Glad you're here. I want to hear all about the Fremont Area Community Foundation and really what makes you and your work so special.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me on here to talk a little bit about the Community Foundation.
ITC wanted to have you on. They're pulling all the strings here. Most of them, at least.
Yeah. Well, thank you to ITC as well. About the Community Foundation, a lot of people that I meet associate the Community Foundation with scholarships and different post-secondary educational resources for going to college, that type of a thing. And that's definitely something that we do. Either people get scholarships to go to college or to continue their education, and it's a big part of the work we do. We also support a variety of other local community needs in Newaygo County through our grant making. We have focuses in community development. We fund projects that preserve natural resources here in the county. We also have the educational attainment component as well. And with our grant making in particular, it's around helping our pre-K through 12 students get the education that they need so that they can be workforce as well as college and career ready. We also have poverty reduction focus in our grant making, where we work to address and fund programs that meet basic needs. So food insecurity, housing insecurity, we help to address that. And then we also have a few other grant rounds that are specific to populations in Newaygo County, such as the older adult population. We have a Bridging Generations Fund that focuses on that, as well as our Amazing X Fund, which focuses on people with disabilities in ways that we can help fund programs and projects that improve the quality of life for them as well.
It sounds, Jenna Smolligan, as the Director of Community Investment, Fremont Area Community Foundation, overall, You're invested in improving the quality of life for all residents of Nuyahuga County. This is that strategic grant making, the scholarships you mentioned, the community partnership, and the foundation is connecting local needs with the generosity of individuals, families, businesses to support education, economic opportunity, community well-being, and you're playing a vital role in ensuring that this community thrives. So can you talk to us just a little bit about some of the specific projects or initiatives that you've been working on?
Yeah, absolutely. A couple that come to mind, the first one would be our Housing Partnership Fund. So Nuyahuga County has a housing shortage, and in 2023, we partnered with the County of Nuyahuga to create a fund that would grant dollars for local housing creation. And so that's been a really cool project to see. We're actually on our eighth grant round for that fund. And so far, we have funded 26 projects, which is going to be creating 219 new housing units here in Nuyahuga County. And in addition to the funds that the Community Foundation, as well as the County of Nuyahuga, has put into that fund, it's also leveraging around $29 million in funding for Nuyahuga County. So that's really cool as it relates to housing.
I look at some of the paperwork on what you're doing and on your community investment in the Fremont Area Community Foundation, and I see the story begins in 1951 when some visionary philanthropists set out to change the future of Nuyahuga County forever. Now, I don't know the name local attorney William J. Brandstrom, but I certainly know the name Gerber, and Frank Gerber was one of the founders as well. Tell us a little bit more about that. Well, whatever you know. Okay. First of all, I should point out, those of you not watching, 1951, she was waiting for many, many more years to be born. So I appreciate that. I even was waiting a couple of years. These are people, though, that gathered to give back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's in our 250th anniversary of America. That's what makes America great. Much of it is in our past, but it's happening still today with the billionaires that the left hates. If you saw all the money billionaires give to all the different foundations and charities and organizations, you'd understand why they are kind of important in our society. But here you are, a story from 1951, enhancing the quality of life for all people of Nuyahuga County and the surrounding communities. And apparently you really have had a renewed vision and core values that guide your work. Could you sum up the vision very easily or no?
We work to enhance, what we're enhancing internal operations. We're working to be more innovative and partner with a variety of different community members and organizations. We also are working to promote the common good. I think another initiative that we are working on here at the Community Foundation is around civility work and providing an opportunity to have goodwill here in our community. So we have been trained as staff and board in civil discourse. We're also providing training opportunities to our community partners and our grantees around having civil discourse and the tools that are important to have those conversations. And one of my colleagues is actually working in White Cloud, which is part of Nuyahuga County, and they are also bringing together a group of people that have been they come from a variety of different backgrounds and perspectives, and they are working on a project together to create a space in White Cloud that will build relationships and that type of thing.
So before we run out of time, Jenna Smalligan, what's the best way for someone to contribute or get involved with your work?
Yeah, the best way to get involved would be to probably call our main line. We have a variety of different teams that would be willing to meet with whoever's calling in for whatever purpose, whether that's to seek a funding for a project or a program.
What's the number?
The number is 231 931-924-5350.
Hang on. 231-924-5350. 5350. 231-924-5350. Reach out to Janice Mulligan, Director of Community Investment, the Fremont Area Community Foundation. They want to help you. That's what they've been doing since 1951. And they're going to continue doing it with the help of Gerber and many, many other companies that help, like ITC. God bless you. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
We really appreciate you stopping by and telling us all about your work. As we continue coming into our time, noon to two, thanks, Kevin Dietz, for giving us one of your hours. Stay with us. Well, now we're into our regular time, and I certainly appreciate Kevin Dietz when management asked him to give up an hour. He did so, and, well, maybe he's out playing golf. Maybe that helped him get out and play golf. I don't know. What's the temperature? I don't even know what the temperature is. But
yeah, maybe a light jacket for golf.
Yeah, well. And his brother's very big in golf, by the way. I keep referring to Kevin as Mike, his brother. So maybe one day Mike should come in and do Kevin's show. What the heck?
Yeah, a little switcheroo.
Yes, a little switcheroo there. That's Mike Parsons, our executive producer. Danielle Mason, the queen of the switches, running the controls back in the Golden Tower, while Ray Templin runs the controls and does the setup here, which we greatly appreciate. And let's see, Rich Luzinski, we started with Renee Vitale, who you used to do a show with very early in the morning. And now is she joining you as well on your new Monday 8 o'clock show?
Yes, she's one of the Ann friends with on Nightside with Mike Parsons. So,
it's called Nightside.
Nightside. Okay. And, Paul, Nightside. You're going to be coming on board very soon. And then we have Renee on board. Rich is on board. Dave Rieger.
Oh, boy.
So
you've got the whole cast of characters.
I need a lot of help.
No, I think it's great because these are all people that have been have had short appearances on our show, if you will.
Maybe get Danielle involved if we can get the timing to work.
That would be fabulous.
Yeah,
I love the fact that they're all getting more exposure.
Yeah,
because they're all good.
Yeah, so many talented people who work here.
We have a lot of talented people who work at WJR, and. And in fact, are asked to do oftentimes the way it is at all businesses, three or four jobs that used to be handled by three or four different people. So it's a different world, and these people have such talent, and we're so fortunate and lucky to have all the ones that you have mentioned. And frankly, and I've said this before, but I'm going to say it again, there are so many people that work at WJR who are the unsung heroes and are behind the scenes that when I thank everybody at WJR, I'm including them because they do work that needs to be done to help us do our jobs. So thank you to all the people behind the scenes that that we don't get to see often. And thanks to our sponsors here because we're here broadcasting live from this beautiful Heritage Museum of Newaygo County. And we're presented by ITC. Proudly, we were there from the beginning of ITC's birth, and they have grown to be such an important American company. They are for the greater grid. I don't know what we would do without that power grid, believe me. And we're so thrilled to be here with the team that is here from the company. You met Julie Burrell, the area manager, local government and community affairs, like Kelly Wazik, also an area manager, Jim Tedder, regional manager, Tim Wolf, area manager, Rebecca Miller, marketing and communications manager, Catherine Harrington, communication specialist. Think of this, Mike. Catherine was an intern at WJR.
Wow.
A while ago. Well, not that long ago. How long ago?
2019,
which does seem like a long time ago, doesn't it? But 2019, and now look at you. She got a real job.
Good for her.
She probably has a pension or a retirement program. Do you have insurance? God bless you. We used to have the best insurance, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan. But one of the new owners along the way made a change. What a mistake they made.
That's it, Paul. We're jumping ship to ITC.
Let's go to ITC. And our job will be to climb those big towers and put the light bulb in at the top.
I'll spot you from the ground. A little to the left, Paul.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness gracious. And we have the boss, Chuck Marshall, the president of ITC Michigan, came an hour early. We are honored to have you here, sir. We are indeed. And you do have a great team. Did I miss anybody on the team that's here? We were all together not too long ago when Linda Apsey decided to retire, and there was a beautiful love affair party for her as Krista Tanner took over and is doing a nice job as president and CEO. All right, news stories. What's going on here?
We have a little breaking news, Paul. Channel 7 is back on Xfinity.
Oh, my gosh. You know, last night in my hotel room, the same problem was here. You couldn't get ABC. They were having a fight with what's the company that owns Channel 7?
ABC, Disney.
No, but it wasn't ABC, Disney. They were having a fight with the regional or local owner, which affected us in Fremont.
Wow.
I was shocked. I went, well, at least I can see what's going on, ABC. I haven't seen them in a long time, since the end of March.
Yeah.
So they got it worked out?
Yeah, I don't really know any details. Someone just posted about it on Facebook, and then we have Xfinity here at the station, so I just popped it over to Channel 7, and there it was. They're back.
Well, thank goodness for that. That's great. Although, I hate to say this, didn't really miss it too much.
Well, a lot of people found a lot of workarounds, especially to watch the Pistons in that seven-game series.
They had to. When is our next great Pistons game?
Tonight. I believe is it 7 or 8?
I don't know. When I'm on the road like this, I'm like in a cone of silence.
Tonight at 7 at LCA.
And what channel will it be on?
These are all on NBC properties. So,
oh, they are?
Yeah.
Oh.
So,
well, as long as they don't have a fight with Comcast
yeah.
Xfinity.
Maybe that's the next fight. So, yeah, it's
not.
Peacock. I'm sure since it's local, the local NBC affiliate will pick it up. Otherwise, it's on NBC Sports Network. But I would imagine it's going to be on WDIV tonight as well.
Here's hoping. Yeah, it should be easy to see our team
right.
like it used to be. It shouldn't be extra expensive. But I'll tell you what. I mean, when I saw that one of the games was on Amazon Prime.
I know.
I love Amazon Prime. But people shouldn't be forced to be joining Amazon Prime to watch a basketball game. What the heck?
Right.
So here's hoping. What? This is how the guys are getting paid ridiculous amounts of money, the players. Because
right.
the owners say, well, we'll just make it up in the fees with the television networks. So, I mean, it all is connected, my friends, and it is already too expensive for some people to go to a game and take their kids, which breaks my heart. But it's going to be that hard to watch it at home if you need to buy all these other channels.
Right.
I don't know how we let it get out of control, but we did. Well, it wasn't up to you and me. Was it? I didn't think so.
I already had Amazon Prime to begin with, but eventually I just got to say, I'm just not going to watch these games. I can't pay for another streaming service. I'm already paying for too many.
You're not alone. You're not alone. There are a lot of us kind of in that boat. All right. We're underway on our own hours now and happy to be here with this wonderful programming from the Heritage Museum of Newaygo County, presented by our friends at ITC, right here on WJR. As we continue, we say hi to an old friend as we do our broadcast here. The Heritage Museum of Newaygo County, presented by our friends at ITC, for the greater grid. I don't know what we'd do without them if they didn't keep the power going for us, and they've done a marvelous job, and it only gets better. And their Michigan president, Chuck Marshall, is going to be here, president of ITC Michigan. And I'll tell you a question I'm going to ask you. I rarely know what I'm going to ask ahead of time, and I may even forget to ask this. But, you know, at our homes, we like to have whatever power lines we can underground, and that's become more popular for a lot of reasons that seem to be pretty good. I'm trying to think of what you could ever do with those high power lines and the highway of lines that we need for that power in the grid. I don't maybe you know, and that's why I'll ask you, if there's any technology in the future that would change the way that power is delivered. So it'll be, I'm interested in that. So if I forget to ask, somebody remind me. Mike does a pretty good job of reminding me. Meanwhile, Nolan Findlay is the editorial page editor for the award-winning Detroit News and co-author of the Civility Book, A Guide to Building Bridges Across the Political Divide. Nolan wrote that with his friend, who, by the way, they disagree politically, but they're good friends. That's the way it used to be. Stephen Henderson with Lynn Gallagher. Nolan, it's always a pleasure. Nice to have you here. Wish you could be on the road. You would like this Pure Michigan tour, I guarantee it.
I bet I would, Paul, but I'm fixing to dive into a plate of Taco Tuesday, so I'm in good shape.
Cinco de Mayo and Taco Tuesday on the same day. Who'da thunk it? Hey, you wrote a great column on the idea that debates matter. And yes, I think it was debates matter. Michigan can't let them go extinct. Fill us in.
Well, I mean, increasingly now, we have candidates for major offices, Senate, U.S. Senate, governor in particular, saying, well, we're not going to debate unless, you know, there's a total eclipse at 3:15 on a Thursday. You know, they set all these conditions before they'll be willing to stand up and define themselves and defend their positions on a debate stage. And it's there's fewer and fewer debates every election cycle, and I believe they are useful. I believe they're informative for voters. They help people see how a candidate behaves under pressure. I don't think there's any substitute for them, but today everybody wants a carefully scripted, scrubbed campaign where, you know, there's no risk, there's no chance that they might blunder or say something they wish they hadn't. And I think the process suffers from it.
Well, as you point out, Nolan Findlay, in your Detroit News column, in Michigan, debates indeed are becoming extinct. The last two election cycles with a U.S. Senate seat, or the governor's office for that matter, at stake, featured just two debates each. And those largely came late in the season after early voting had already started.
And, you know, this is probably one of the most important election cycles we've seen, just for the volume of offices that are up for grabs. And voters are going to need all the help they can get and all the information they can get. And, you know, I've been working with the new Michigan Debate Commission to put together the debates during the policy conference on Mackinac, the Regional Chambers Policy Conference. And it's almost impossible to get these candidates to commit. They want to pick and choose who they're going to debate, you know, who's going to moderate, on and on and on. They want to create the most favorable environment for themselves that they can, rather than just stepping up and say, I've got nothing to be afraid of, you know. And that's what you'd want your leaders to do.
I kind of have, it's beyond this now, but I kind of have thought it was, if a candidate felt they had nothing to win by going into a debate and doing a great job, but a lot to lose if they go into a debate and don't do a great job. But it's gone beyond that now, hasn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, that should be the prerequisite for the job. If you're seeking a political office in Michigan, you should be able to, or willing to, stand up and present yourself in an unscripted format. You don't know who these candidates are today. They've all got these manufactured personas online. You got candidates scrubbing their email accounts. Both two of the three Senate candidates, Mallory McMorrow and Abdul El-Sayed, have scrubbed their past social media accounts so voters can't see who they've been in their past. And you don't know who you're voting for.
That is a very good point, given what's been going on and the way people are scrubbing. And you mentioned Michigan State Senator Mallory McMorrow, who obviously, foolishly, said things in her social media accounts or whatever that are coming back to bite her. So she can scrub all she wants, And so can the other guy you mentioned. But what they have said, how they have felt in the past, still matters. And luckily for us, not for them, all of that still stuff, that stuff still exists in the ether.
Yeah, we need to know, are they who they were then, or are they who they say they are now? And, you know, you can get at some of that on a debate stage, but you can't get at it through these campaign ads and these AI accounts that paint a portrait of the candidate that nobody really recognizes.
Well, remember this, because you and I are happily old enough to remember the Nixon and Kennedy debates.
Right.
By the way, I'm looking at a room that not one person in here was around for the Nixon and Kennedy debates. Be that as it may, same thing with my listeners, but I have won. But people remember that if they listened to debate on the radio, they felt Nixon won, and if they watched it, because Nixon looked so terrible on camera, that they felt Kennedy won. You remember that?
Yeah, and it was the start of the television era of politics. And, you know, there was that debate. There was the 2024 debate in which, you know, Biden simply destroyed his reelection hopes. These debates can be consequential, but they can lift candidates as well. You know, a candidate can step up and improve his or her standing with a good debate performance, with a message that resonates.
You know, it is a great, will be used in our history, that Biden debate and all the people that gathered around him to support him because they supported him, even though he showed there was no way in the world he should be even president, let alone run for president again, and all the excuses they came up. Well, you know, he had a European tour. Yeah, 3 weeks ago he had a European tour. I've traveled to Europe. It doesn't take me 3 weeks to get back to being able to make sense. It's just astonishing the excuses people came up with.
It exposed the moral bankruptcy of our partisan system, our partisan politics in this country. You know, as long as he's your guy, nothing he can do is wrong. And nobody will step up and call out their guy or point a finger and say, you know, he's not all there. We could use a little more of that today.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy to hear that you're involved in Sandy Baru Oz Greater Detroit Regional Chamber Policy Conference. We'll be there broadcasting WJR as we have, as unlike any radio station in our community, we will be doing it again for as many 30, I don't know how many years we've been doing that. But you're going to be involved in some debate activity up there?
Well, we're helping.
Is that what you said?
Yeah, I mean, I'm part of the media debate coalition that has merged with the Econ Club's debate efforts. So, you know, we're all working together to see what we can come up with.
Well, the Econ Club has done a marvelous job, too, and we're happy to be a part of those broadcasts. We got to run. Always appreciate talking with you. I do hope Nolan Finley, editorial page editor for the Detroit News, I hope the Civility book, A Guide to Building Bridges Across the Political Divide, is selling well and that people are benefiting from your good work.
Thanks, Paul.
All right. Thank you, Nolan. Okay. We continue in Focus with Paul W. Smith on WJR. Good choice on the music. Danielle Mason, Mike Parsons back in the studios. It is Cinco de Mayo, the annual reminder that we love a good time in America. This holiday marks Mexico's 1862 victory over France at the Battle of Puebla. But it's much bigger, a much bigger deal now in the U.S., where it's been kind of rebranded as a marketing tool for restaurants and bars. What the heck? Enjoy yourself. If enjoying yourself has to do with drinking, please don't drive. Just a quick little reminder on this Cinco de Mayo. We are so happy to be here amongst the people of ITC who are making this broadcast possible, including Julie Burrell, Kelly Wazik, Jim Tedder, Tim Wolf, Rebecca Miller, Catherine Harrington, and the Big Cheese, the president of ITC Michigan, Chuck Marshall's not only here, He'll be talking with us in just a few minutes. Right now, we go to Marie Osborne, the WJR Director of Community Affairs and News. And federal investigators are working to piece together what led to a shooting near the White House yesterday that sent a suspect and, unfortunately, a teenage bystander to the hospital. Marie, good afternoon. And what's the story here?
Hi, Paul. We seem to be talking about these things way too often. So in this case, the U.S. Secret Service says that the officers moved in yesterday afternoon. They spotted a man. He looked like he was carrying a gun. This was near 15th Street and Independence Avenue. Authorities say that individual fled, then displayed the weapon again, prompting the agents to respond with gunfire after shots were directed their way. The suspect, identified by law enforcement sources, is 45-year-old Michael Marks of Texas. He was taken into custody with multiple gunshot wounds. Officials say his injuries are serious, not life-threatening, and they are expecting to move charges on him. The teenage tourist who was hurt suffered what investigators said was a superficial grazing injury. It was caused by a ricocheted bullet. No Secret Service agents were harmed. So this incident sparked worries at the White House. As you can imagine, it led the press to be evacuated from the North Lawn. Officials say the incident doesn't appear to be connected to the White House or the president, who was inside at the time. And Paul, as you know, this is less than 2 weeks since that shooting at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, where the president, the vice president, other administration officials had to be evacuated from that venue. So the investigation into what happened yesterday, now that's being handled by the local police. Warrants are planned. Authorities are examining all the different facets of that case.
Do not take this the wrong way, but I'm going to make lemonade out of some of the lemons we've been dealt in the last several weeks with our Secret Service. As I pointed out in my column in the Detroit News yesterday, our Secret Service has fired their guns 11 times in two assaults on the president or attempted assaults. And out of those 11 shots, hit nobody. There's no joke here, but at least the Secret Service hit this guy when they shot at him this time. Unfortunately, they also grazed a bystander.
Mm-hmm.
But this helped their percentage in the shootings they've been with, where they keep missing people, and at close range.
I wondered the same thing after that correspondence dinner. We know they
you,
mean...
Can you imagine? You imagine?
Okay,
and I don't have enough... Go ahead.
The only defense I might be able to come up... Because, you know, I'm always thinking, like, well, what is the other side to this? Well, the only defense would be that maybe they didn't want... You know, they were... They obviously didn't want to shoot bystanders, right, at the correspondence dinner. So maybe that's why they missed. I don't know. I'm throwing that out there.
It's nice of you to feel that way, and I always bend over backwards for law enforcement and on their side. But the reality is, if this guy who got a room the night before, if he had five people with him that got a room the night before, and now picture five people coming out of that door where the dog was telling them, hey, guys, look behind this door, and they ignored the dog. It's like a pilot ignoring his gauges saying, oh, that can't be right, and they crash. Well, they didn't follow the dog telling them what to do. What if five guys ran out that door right then? Trust me when I tell you, not all of them would have stumbled and tripped and fallen, and some of them would have gotten down the stairs, the door was open, and they would have just randomly started shooting, and they would have killed people. So I can't make excuses for the Secret Service. I can't.
Yeah.
The fact that they weren't in the stairways. The Secret Service I used to know and worked with back in 1984 with President Ronald Reagan, who still got shot, but they were just so much more aware of what was going on. You see the Secret Service guy, he's just so casual. He's not even looking out to where people might be coming in. And we all know the sound that a running man makes. If you're there and you're on guard, you look, and you would have had a chance to tackle him, in fact, let alone shooting five or six times. Luckily, he didn't hit anybody else, but he didn't hit the assailant either. And if he hadn't tripped, boy... I'm telling you, Marie,
No, I agree with you on all these points. These are serious questions that have to be asked about this detail that surrounds the president. We can't have that. And it is, I agree with you, because I saw that very night, and I'm wondering, that just doesn't seem to make sense.
No, it didn't make sense, sadly. And I'm not putting down all the Secret Service. I mean, imagine, now this wasn't the presidential detail out there like that on the perimeter.
Correct.
And yes, it can be argued, well, nobody got hurt, they didn't get through, blah, blah, blah. But I'm just telling you, I couldn't imagine being paid to jump in front of a bullet to protect the president of the United States or anybody. I just can't imagine. But that's what they're paid to do, and they accept that responsibility, and I love them for that. But the truth is, they've got problems, and they need to address those problems and fix them. Thank you, Riri.
Yeah, thank you. Doesn't appear like those questions are being answered, if you ask me, but, you know.
I think you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, and you usually are. Thank you, Marie.
Thank you.
Marie Osborne, WJR's Director of Community Affairs and News, on the now another shooting, this time near the White House, and they did hit the guy, unfortunately a bystander as well. Well, I've been waiting for this moment. I've known this guy for a while, and he does a great job. He is Vice President at ITC Holdings Corporation, President of ITC Michigan, where he leads the strategic direction of the ITC Transmission and METC operating companies. Previously, he served in transmission planning, leadership roles, overseeing system needs and solutions to ensure reliable, cost-effective electric delivery across ITC subsidiaries. Charles Marshall, the Vice President. Chuck, it's great to be with you. Thanks for sponsoring us for this broadcast.
I'm happy to be here, Paul. We love the show. I love the Pure Michigan Tour. I love the fall session we do with the Ag Tour as well. It's always a pleasure to be in front of you.
Well, we just love the fact that you've been supportive of us as we've tried to be supportive of you from the very beginning. And by the way, Fremont, I've never been here. Newaygo County, I've never been here. It's a great location, and it's a great find for our listeners. I'm happy to point that out as we broadcast live from the Heritage Museum of Newaygo County. Tell me how ITC came to select it, because you choose a place every year.
We do. Yeah, so this is actually some of the things I really enjoy about my job is I get to get out around the state, experience new areas, new geography. Because we have been a longtime sponsor, every year we have a little bit of a strategy or a brainstorming session. What area across the state do we want to kind of shine the spotlight on? And so this year when we got together, had that conversation, what's a little bit different about the composition of our team, because our team is growing, we have some new employees. And those employees actually reside on the Newaygo County Tourism Board. And so they started to talk about Newaygo County. And immediately it was like, well, that embodies all things kind of Pure Michigan. Like, we've got to go there. We've got to check it out. And they shared a little bit of the data with me. And I don't know if you've seen this yet, but Newaygo County has over 200 lakes. There's two main river systems. There's the Hardy Dam, which has the Hardy Pond, sort of the backwaters to the dam. Which in and around the Hardy Pond, there's, I think, over 40 miles of non-motorized trail systems for people to enjoy. There's over 90,000 acres of public land. And so when you think about the Michigan experience, kind of Pure Michigan, the west side of the state, like Newaygo County, is something you should put on the map in terms of stopping by.
Yeah, and you guys, frankly, today are really putting them on the map.
We're doing our best. And actually, to that end, we had a wonderful lunch today from, I think it's the Riverside Cafe. So if you do get to Newaygo County, stop by, say hi, wonderful people, and amazing food.
Well, that's excellent. That's certainly good news. How is ITC bridging the gap between where we are with our power needs and going forward? We used to refer to it as the energy superhighway, which is so very important to this country. Everybody talks about the grid. I'll incorporate that too. How's the grid?
Yeah, so where we are from a grid perspective, and just a little bit of kind of level setting from ITC's perspective. So we do own the high voltage electric transmission system in most of Michigan's Lower Peninsula. We don't generate the electrons, but we take those electrons from where they're generated and ultimately deliver them to our customers. So ITC has spent the last 2 decades investing heavily in the transmission system, and we've significantly improved the reliability of the transmission system. What ITC recognized, I would say 5 or 6 years ago, is the system that we have due to our changing landscape is not the system that we need for the future. And so we got together, we partnered with other transmission owners, even neighboring states, with different entities and organizations, with our load serving entities. And we said, hey, let's develop a transmission plan that's going to carry us sort of forward into the next generation. And that took us about 2 years, actually probably more than 2 years to develop that. But we developed what ultimately became, with support of a lot of others, the long range transmission plan. And that long range transmission plan is about 450 miles of greenfield transmission. What greenfield transmission is it's putting transmission where transmission isn't today. So we have to acquire new right of way, work with new communities, and we need to develop that. So that's going to take us anywhere from 7 to 10 years. So if you hear the long range transmission plan, that's a little bit of the context what it is, and that's what we're going to be working on over the next 7 to 10 years. There's a couple important things to remember about that, though, is it's forward looking infrastructure. And what that means is it's cost effective. There's a lot of discussion around affordability in our space right now in the utility space. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important for customers to know when they look at their bill after we start commissioning some of these projects in the year to come, your bill is actually lower because of these projects. So these projects don't drive your bill up. They actually pull your bill in the other direction, and you have a more reliable system, and you have a more resilient system because of these.
A quick question, quick answer before we run out of time. I love the high voltage towers and the way you dress them up around the holidays, like Christmas trees and all of that. I think that's fabulous, a great thing to do. Is there ever a down the road another way to deliver that high voltage electric transmission underground or in another way in the future?
So the technology for underground does exist today. The fact of the matter is physics remains true in sort of all instances, and it is most cost effective to do overhead transmission. The one thing to be mindful of, and I'll put some numbers to this just for context, if we build 345 kV transmission, rough numbers, it's $3 to $4 million a mile for 345 double circuit overhead transmission. If you want to bury that same transmission, the cost is somewhere around 7 to 10 times more.
Oh my.
So you take that $5 million project and it becomes a $50 million project.
Yikes.
Yes.
And frankly, we're gonna end up paying for that if
exactly.
That's the case. And the way you check those lines now, it's fascinating to me. Helicopters can check those lines. You can't do that with buried cables very well. And you can't use a submarine either because it's just dirt. So I just wanted to tell you that. I don't know what – that's what came to my mind, and I don't know why. But that's why I do this show.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for supporting us.
Thank you, sir.
And thanks for helping this community and all the communities that ITC helps in. And this, of course, is Chuck Marshall, the president of IEC Michigan, the energy infrastructure and the importance to the economic development that we see happening all the time as you engage with your communities and help them grow in such an important way. Thank you so much, Chuck.
Thank you, Paul.
We continue in Focus on WJR. And our final hour here, and we've loved being here at this beautiful Heritage Museum of Newaygo County, and presented by our friends at ITC for the Greater Grid. They've just been great people to have here and to welcome us with our relentless positive radio on this Cinco de Mayo. We're at the home of Gerber, and that makes us the baby food capital of the world. And there's a wonderful display here at the Heritage Museum of Newaygo County. If it hasn't been on your list of places to pass through, visit, come and stay a while, I'm asking you to put it on your list because you will not be disappointed. And I thank the entire ITC team that's been here, including Chuck Marshall, the president of ITC Michigan, who we just had on the line here, well, in person with us on the air here on the energy infrastructure and its importance to economic development in this community and all the communities they're in. And I thank Jim Tedder, Regional Manager, Local Government and Community Affairs, Tim Wolf, also Area Manager, as is Kelly Wozick, who we're going to have join us near the end of the show, just a few words here, Julie Burrell, who's already been on board here as an area manager, local government community affairs, doing a nice job, as Rebecca Miller, marketing and communications manager, and Catherine Harrington, communications specialist, who used to work at WJR as an intern for Ann Thomas. So everybody, it's a family feel. It's a family affair, if you will. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll say hi to Mark Krause, the Economic Development Director of Newaygo County Economic Development Partnership. We've got the team on their toes while we're on the road. Pablo, Dean Trailways, we appreciate his work, and we appreciate Dean Trailways and the whole Dean family doing a nice job and getting us from here to there. We appreciate it. Mike Parsons, our executive producer. Danielle Mason, the queen of the switches. Ray Templin running the controls here in Newaygo County. We also, of course, have Rich Luzinski keeping an eye on WJR traffic and weather first. And we started that first hour that Kevin Dietz was kind enough to give us with Renee Vitale. So it's relentless positive radio on Cinco de Mayo. I just say, if you're going to be out there celebrating, and if celebrating has a little booze involved, you know, you can celebrate without booze, but if you're celebrating with a little booze, please let someone else drive. By the way, for those of you in the Midland area or would like to make the trip, at the Midland Center for the Arts today, this evening at 7 p.m., the Boundless Horizons concerts are underway, celebrating Freedom 250 with a free 90-minute family-friendly concert featuring the 50-member concert band, where you enjoy patriotic favorites, inspiring stories of our nation's heritage, original works, and Broadway classics. Live in concert, it's the United States Air Force Band of Mid-America. So it's tonight at 7 at the Midland Center for the Arts in Midland, Michigan, and tomorrow at 7, Skyline High School Theater in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And in fact, tomorrow is Wednesday. Where are we going to be on Wednesday?
I think you're in Midland tomorrow there, Paul.
Oh, there we are. So yes. It's good that I gave him a heads up, and then we'll be in Ann Arbor on Thursday. So
you're following them.
Well, the band is our opening act, I like to think.
I got
to
get them warmed up.
I just thought of that just now. So what is he talking about? So what do we have here? Anything breaking in news that I wouldn't know about because I'm on the road here?
Well, let's see. Some good news and some bad news on the sports scene yesterday. The good news, the Pistons, they've extended J.B. Bickerstaff after coming back and beating the Magic in 7. And yesterday, just as we're kind of getting over the high of a Game 7 win against the Magic, we find out that Tarek Skubal is going to be out for a couple months because he's got to get surgery.
I saw that. Yeah, that's going to be very painful for our Tigers and therefore for our fans, all of us. That's going to be a tough one.
Yeah,
you just hate to see that.
I think he said bodies within his elbow, which sounds pretty gruesome, but I guess it's a bone chip or something that's been getting.
I saw that and I thought it was a misprint. Bodies in his elbow.
Yeah. So
what the heck does that mean?
So
it conjures up a terrible picture.
It really does. So from what I heard, and they won't know exactly what's in there, I guess, until they open them up, but. The theory is that there might be a bone chip or something in there, and then it gets.
Why don't they just say bone chips possible in his elbow?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, bone chips doesn't sound much better, but it sounds better than bodies inside his elbow.
I think it sounds a world better than anyway. All right,
yeah.
So a couple of quick things. Have you heard anything? I have not on the condition of what was once America's mayor, Rudy Giuliani.
What I saw is that, you know, obviously Jared Halpern told us that he had pneumonia. I guess it got so bad he was on a ventilator for a little bit. Yesterday he was taken off the ventilator and he's breathing on his own. So
sounds
like some progress.
That's better news than I expected.
Yeah.
And I noticed it came up on my phone. There was an earthquake in Monroe, my Monroe?
Yeah, a 2.7 amplitude earthquake, and this is in addition to the one that we got in Amherstburg, which is in Canada across from Gros Isle, a week ago Sunday. So there's been a couple of small earthquakes recently around that area.
Wow. All right. Well, it just shows you it can happen anywhere, can't it?
Yeah, and I never end up feeling them. Not like I'm complaining, but you know, there'll be people saying, "Oh, I heard a big boom and the house shook." Every time there's been a earthquake in Michigan, I have not been privy to it until the news reports later on.
Could you open that back up? Ray just brought me breaking information. Actually, it's a definition of bodies, and every time I touched his phone, it went away. The term loose bodies refers to small fragments of bone that can form stress on the bone at the back of the elbow, known as the olecranon. I don't know. These fragments or loose bodies can crack and become loose, potentially causing pain and requiring surgical intervention if they are severe enough. In the case of Tarek, the Tigers' ace, loose bodies in his elbow led to surgery, and while the exact timetable for his return is not yet determined, the procedure is expected to be relatively simple and should not impact his ligaments. Scoobal's recovery will likely involve a 2 to 3 month rehabilitation period, allowing him to gradually return to his much-needed pitching routine. Wow.
Well, hopefully we get him back by the final stretch of the regular season and then the playoffs. But, you know, who knows how long it's going to take for him to get back to form, even when he's healed up enough to pitch.
You never know. You never know what's going to happen there. So Ray Templin gave me his phone, and I feel honor-bound to tell him that while I was reading this, a thing came up and said, we have noticed movement in your driveway. I don't know if this is going to worry you or if this happens all the time. My phone's never said, we've discovered motion in your driveway. I obviously don't use my phone as well as he uses his.
Also, someone's trying to reach him about his car's extended warranty as well.
Wait, you can get an extended warranty for your car? It's astonishing. Isn't it kind of astonishing? It is. All right, Mr. Parsons, always a pleasure. Our executive producer, along with Danielle Mason, Queen of the Switches, Ray Templin here, Rich Luzinski, Renee Vitale, Ava DeManja, who's married to Chris Nixon. There's a long story. And we're so glad to be with you as we continue in Focus on location at the Heritage Museum of Newaygo County, presented by our friends at ITC. Coming up, the Economic Development Director of Newaygo County Economic Development Partnership, Mr. Mark Krause. Stay with us. Well, spring has finally arrived here in Michigan. Unfortunately, so has the threat of nasty spring storms, and many people have gotten caught off guard with power outages that storms can leave behind. Well, look, my friends at Family Heating, Cooling, and Electrical are here to help. And this is family still. This is the next generation of family. Dan Pelko, Crystal Klempert Pelko. And there's no company I trust more because I know this family. I've known the company. I've known the family for nearly 50 years. And I know none of their people work on commission. I want you to be ready this year for Mother Nature with a reliable standby generator. They're more affordable than they've ever been before. And Family Heating, Cooling, and Electrical offers generator installations. They also offer generator maintenance and generator repairs. Their technicians, in fact, are Generac certified, which is critical because improper service or skipped maintenance can void your manufacturer's warranty. Plus, Family Heating, Cooling, and Electrical goes above and beyond with a 10-year extended warranty compared to the typical 5 years offered elsewhere. Here's another bonus. They don't pass on the service fee from credit card companies onto you. That's incredible, Dan Pelko, Crystal Klempert Pelko. You see, at Family, they've decided cash and credit are the same. That's a big advantage for you. Visit familyheating.com to schedule your free estimate today and take advantage of these savings and their expertise and the fact they've been around forever as the family. Visit familyheating.com. Schedule your free estimate today. 116 at 760 WJR. We continue in Focus and having a great time here in Newaygo County. And we're brought to you by ITC. They've always sent us to some great places. Some of these are great discoveries that we never had before. This one happens to be the Heritage Museum of Newaygo County. And so that brings us to the Economic Development Director of the Newaygo County Economic Development Partnership, Mr. Mark Krause. Mark, nice meeting you.
You as well, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's our pleasure to be here. Tell us about, because there are people who don't know, tell us about the Newaygo County Economic Development Partnership and your role here in the region. And anything you want to add about the region is okay by us.
All right. So the Newaygo County Economic Development Partnership is a collaboration between the County of Newaygo, and it's led with the County of Newaygo. It's led by an advisory board of community leaders from various industries, from manufacturing, finance, philanthropy, government, municipal leaders. And what we're really trying to do is build and maintain a strong, resilient local economy here in Newaygo County. You know, we help businesses start, grow, and stay here in Newaygo County. Being in a relatively small county, rural county, you know, that takes many shapes and forms. So we're working with small companies all the way up to large global manufacturers, and making sure that they have what they need to stay here and grow.
I'll tell you, I don't think I've ever been. I'm a lifelong Michigander or Michiganian. I lived under both reigns. I did spend a lot of years. I spent some time, 5 years in New York City, 6 years in Philadelphia before I was able to come back home, and I'm thrilled that I was able to do that. I don't think I've ever been here in Fremont or Newaygo. And coming here, we kind of looked at each other as Pablo from Dean Trailways was driving us. We looked at each other and went, wow, we're kind of like in the middle of nowhere. And then all of a sudden, it's this big reveal. And you've got a lot to show. I mean, Fremont, Newaygo County is quite the place. And it's pure Michigan. I can't even think of, it just represents pure Michigan every way.
Absolutely. And that's really the appeal of Newaygo County. You know, we have 230 natural lakes, 350 miles of rivers and streams. Half the county is inside the Manistee National Forest. And that really informs how life is lived here in Newaygo County.
Yeah. I picked up, I always do this, yet I haven't opened it yet while we're on the air here, but this wonderful Newaygo County, Go Newaygo County Exploring, the 2026-2027 Visitors Guide. I wonder if that's available online as well.
It is available online.
It's a huge magazine, but if you can get it online.
Yeah, our Tourism Council, the Newaygo County Tourism Council, really took off, I don't know, maybe a decade ago, and rebranded the county as Newaygo Exploring.
Nice.
They do a fantastic job of promoting the county, all of the things that we can do here. It's when you're here, you fish, you hike, you paddle, you have access to all of those things every day of the year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, and in fact, it's always, economic development is always kind of fascinating to me, and I know you've got some major focus areas. What might those be?
Yeah, so part of that economic development partnership that we have here in Newaygo County, a key piece of that is being connected with the Right Place out of Kent County, which is West Michigan's economic development organization. And so they help us make data-driven decisions, and the what we look at, our focus areas here in Newaygo County, they really focus around three pillars: people, place, and prosperity. And the people pillar is really about the workforce. So, we're working with local schools and colleges and universities, training providers and employers, making sure that the people of Newaygo County are prepared for the jobs today and the careers of the future. So we're looking at talent attraction and retention initiatives. The goal, we want people to build a life here, not just find a job here.
Come here, visit first, find out what it's all about, visit, then decide to maybe live here and decide to maybe work here. How's the job market?
It's good. We've got some really large employers. We have some, smaller employers, but, making sure that the community is ready for more employees to come. It's an issue that's not necessarily unique to Nuevo County, but employers need employees.
Right.
And so having that infrastructure in place is really key for economic development.
And more and more, where you're going to become an employee, where you're going to work, where you're going to live matters a lot. And from everything we've seen and everything you're telling us, Mark Krause, Economic Development Director, Nuevo County Economic Development Partnership, this is a great place for Michiganders and others to live.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, we have that natural beauty of, woods and water, but we're much more than that. We have very welcoming communities. We have affordable communities. There's really a strong sense of connection here. You know, people love to support the local small businesses. You really do get that authentic small town feel, but we've got access to regional amenities as well. So here in Nuevo County, we're lucky enough to have Corwell Health having a hospital here. We've got great cultural and arts institutions like the Heritage Museum that we're in now. But we're also just about an hour away from professional hockey and volleyball and soccer, major concert venues, and we're an hour away from Lake Michigan and its beaches. So,
oh boy.
Yeah, so you get that natural beauty, you know, that more rural lifestyle, slower pace, but you're, you know, an hour's drive away from, quote, the city. If that's what you're attracted to, you're not that far. So you get that great quality of life, affordable living, with still access to those other amenities.
And we remind our listeners, as we did from the beginning, this is the home of Gerber, which makes this area the baby food capital of the world.
Absolutely. And that's a big part of the history of Nuevo County, certainly from an employment standpoint. We're known for agriculture and tourism, and Gerber has always been a big, big part of that.
Quick take on, again, what else is happening in economic development in the region, in more specifically in housing and that workforce development you touched on.
Yeah. One of the great things we have going on in Nuevo County, and it has been for generations, is collaboration. So housing has become a really key priority here, making sure our employers have the employees they need. And the County of Nuevo and the Fremont Area Community Foundation came together to develop the Housing Partnership Fund that really helps close the financing gap to spur housing developments. And we've had dozens and dozens, I might say hundreds, of new housing units come on the market over the last several years because of that partnership fund.
Beautiful. Well, hey, keep up the good work, Mark.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
It's very apparent and obvious. This is a thriving community.
It really is. And, you know, the work that we're doing here, we're investing in people, strengthening the communities. And when we work together, we can really grow that economy that will thrive and survive for generations.
Mark Krause, the Economic Development Director, Nuevo County Economic Development Partnership. A pleasure having you on. Good luck to you.
Thanks, Paul. I appreciate it.
Any way we can be of help along the way. Any friend of ITC is a friend of ours.
Thank you, Paul.
We continue in focus on News Talk 760 WJR. And keeping track of all the news and information following the great Kevin Dietz. I hope you had your dose of Dietz. And then followed by Ryan Armani, who comes up here with JR Afternoon in less than a half an hour from right now. We're keeping track of other things that are going on in our world. We're told the ceasefire between the U.S. and Iran is in danger. People have their own thoughts about it. We always like to check in with the former congressman and Army veteran, Peter Meyer, who joins us right now in focus with Paul W. Smith. Peter, it's always a pleasure, sir.
Always a pleasure to be on, sir.
We appear to be at risk of the ceasefire ending, or, depending on where you stand, finally getting back to eliminating Iran, which every president for the last several has said we needed to do to keep them from having a nuclear weapon. So what's the story?
Yeah, it's important to step back and ask or better understand why we have the ceasefire in the first place. I mean, the ceasefire was largely intended as a pause, helpful on the U.S. side to replenish interceptors and move additional elements we needed into theater, but also on the Iranian side, to give them an opportunity to figure out who's in control, who can make the call, who can actually speak on behalf of this regime? Because obviously the first wave of attacks, in late February, early March, were targeting the regime as a whole. They went, or not as a whole, I should say, targeting the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, targeting some elements of the supreme leader and other elements around him, but leaving the civilian infrastructure, the civilian leadership in place. After several weeks of bombardment and, kind of chaos on their side, the intent of that ceasefire was to say, okay, figure out who amongst you can make this call, who can actually sit down at the negotiating table, and let's see where we are. So if the ceasefire does collapse, if the U.S. does go back in with offensive strikes, within Iran in any large, order, that will, I don't view that necessarily as a failure of that ceasefire. It's just that ceasefire wasn't able to achieve what it intended to. We didn't have the table set in a fortuitous way for negotiations. And so let's go back and see if we can't, bring about a better placement and a better setting of the stage for an ultimate negotiation. Now, obviously, that's happening in the backdrop of the Strait of Hormuz being closed, of disruption to global energy markets, in ways that, we've felt in the U.S. with, gas prices at their highest since they've been since June of 2022. But much more acutely, it's been felt in Asia and specifically in China, where they're running down their reserves of oil and energy supplies because they're far more dependent on what's coming out of the Strait of Hormuz. So I think there's both a micro picture, just looking at what ships are transiting, the strait, and then there's the macro picture, which is factoring in countries that do have influence over Iran, specifically China.
I do worry. You tell me if I'm misplacing this worry, but I'm a professional worrier. I have been very concerned along the way that this is helping our enemies. And people hate to hear me say that, but China is one of our enemies. They've been stealing our technology. What's the word I'm looking for? They've been stealing
property.
Our intellectual property forever and getting away with it. And I'm not talking about people in China. I'm talking about the government of China. So now you have China, Russia, North Korea. You have all these people now ganging up to befriend other countries that they never really did, but they feel they have a way to do it by joining up together to complain about what President Trump and America is doing. This worries me. Is that unfounded worry, Peter Meyer?
I don't want to say any belief that you have is unfounded. I would say that I draw a very different conclusion. I mean, the cooperation
Please.
Between Iran, China...
Regale me.
The cooperation between Iran, China, and Russia has been incredibly well established over the decades. I mean, just look at, what type of aircraft the Iranians were flying. I mean, it was Soviet-built aircraft, apart from, some old Top Gun relics that were transferred during the Shah. Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, China has been the main off-taker of a lot of the illicit petroleum that evaded the sanctions and was coming out of Iran, which was an important economic lifeline in both directions. So in a lot of ways, I do not think that this has deepened any of those alliances. If anything, it has shown many of them to be, not worth the paper they were written on. I mean, there's been some support from the Chinese and the Russians to the Iranian military, including some satellite support and help targeting U.S. forces, which is absolutely unacceptable. But they have not seen any large transfers of weaponry. The Chinese and the Russians haven't participated in a overt offensive way. If anything, I think it has shown that if you're on their side, if you're on the side of those who are adversaries to the U.S., that is no real coalition, and the Russians are in no place to help. They're still bogged down in Ukraine, and the Chinese throughout all of this, and let's expand the scope to not just be Iran, but to look at Venezuela as well, which was one of their main suppliers. 80% of Venezuelan crude oil was going to China before the U.S. went and deposed Maduro. The Chinese are sitting there thinking, boy, not only was our technology absolutely curb stomped in Venezuela and in Iran, but now we've also shown, some of our strategic weaknesses on the global stage. So I think of all of this in the context of, does this make it more likely or less likely that in the next 5 years, China will go after Taiwan and cause, truly what could be a global conflagration? I think that everything to date is showing that that is less and less going to be the case. And let's also not forget, China has a lot of relationships in the Gulf apart from Iran. I mean, they were very close partners with many of the states in the Gulf Cooperation Council. And what did China do when Iran was sending, continues to send drones and ballistic missiles and other, you know, cruise missiles attacking Emirati and Qatari and Saudi, cities? They did nothing. Even a belated, tepid, well, you know, that's not a good thing. Okay, well, again, it's showing where your friends are, showing who your enemies are. And in all this, the U.S. has proven itself to be a much more resolute and strong partner who actually has agency, and when push comes to shove, will be there.
Peter, I feel better than I did before our conversation, so I thank you for that, sir. Always a pleasure.
I am here to make you feel like the future is bright, because it is.
Thank you. Well, job well done. Peter Meyer, former congressman, Army veteran, shedding some light, learned light, and why I'm maybe an over-worrier about some of these things. Time will tell, that's for sure, as we continue in focus on WJR. Ah, yes, Cinco de Mayo. We're celebrating it early. Well, we're just celebrating it here. Having a wonderful time at the Heritage Museum of Nuevo County, presented by ITC, and representing this entire team from ITC, the area manager for Nuevo County. It's a pleasure to have Kelly Wozzeck on with us just before we end here. Why don't you just quickly remind our listeners who ITC is, and a little bit quickly about your role with the company.
Sure. Yeah, so ITC, we are basically the high voltage transmission line in the Lower Peninsula. And if you think about it, we're essentially the backbone to the electrical grid.
Excellent. Way, a great way to put
it. Yeah. And then my role as an area manager, kind of like the community liaison to support communities, local government, meeting with them, giving them education presentations, also hearing their needs, and then going back to the company and kind of being that liaison with the company, giving them that feedback.
That's one of the things that makes, to me, ITC so special. Not every company does that, has a liaison right. on location. You do in every community. Mm-hmm. And why did you select Nuevo this time around, specifically the Heritage Museum of Nuevo County, as one of our stops in this year's Paul W. Smith WJR Pure Michigan Tour?
Sure. So I'm excited. I started with ITC back in December, and I am a local to Nuevo County, and I just am so happy that ITC has had a footprint with our transmission lines for a long time in our county, but to be able to be that local voice and support that locally and then bring that back to our team all over the state is just so beneficial, I think, for the company and our communities that we serve. But also the Heritage Museum, they tell our legacy, our story, and they keep it alive. And what they do for, you know, the generations of the children that are coming through the school systems here, giving the tours and things like that.
Like the second graders that were here when we got here
right.
this morning.
Yeah, yeah, they were rambunctious. That was fun. But yeah, it's just keeping that legacy and our story alive and not forgetting where we came from.
And ITC essentially owns Michigan's grid, and thank goodness they do and take good care of it. But what's the status of the energy landscape in Michigan and what you're, as a company, focused on right now?
Sure. I think our president, Chuck Marshall, touched on it during his segment, but, you know, we're always thinking ahead. Transmission can take 7 to 10 years to build a new transmission line, and we're looking at 450 miles right now in the pipeline to come over the next 10 essential years. So we're really trying to be resilient and keep up on the reliability that we need to provide.
And again, Kelly, you guys work so well, ITC works so well with the communities and landowners.
Yeah, yeah, and that's one of the greatest things I love about being an area manager, because we are the boots on the ground locally, and being able to make those trusting relationships with the communities and the landowners to let them know, you know, we live here too. I'm not, you know, from out of state or downstate. I live in these communities as well, and so I really take what they say to heart, and, you know, we try to be, you know, make the least impactful decisions, be as transparent as possible, and give them all the information that they need so they know that we're with them.
You've done a nice job, and I want to thank you on behalf of WJR and supporting us again on our Pure Michigan Tour.
Yeah, thank you, Paul.
Thank you very much. Kelly Wozzeck, area manager right here in Nuevo County, and joined by a whole bunch of folks that have been with us throughout the entire broadcast. Tim Wolf, area manager, local government, community affairs. Jim Tedder, regional manager, local government, community affairs. Julie Burrell, area manager, local government, community affairs, was on the program at the start to give $1,000 unexpectedly to Stephen Ratke, the executive director of the Heritage Museum of Newaygo County, Rebecca Miller, marketing communications, Catherine Harrington, communications specialist. Again, I say it every time, used to work at WJR. And also, of course, the president of ITC Michigan, Chuck Marshall. Did I miss any of the ITC people? I got them all?
Got them all.
All right. And then there's the WJR people. Mike Parsons, our executive producer, Daniel Mason, queen of the switches, working here alongside Ray Templin, Rich Luzinski. We started off with Renee Vitale with our WJR traffic and weather. Ava DeMangia, who explained why she didn't take Chris Nixon's last name. I didn't. Was it because of President Nixon at the time? Is that what happened? No? Okay. Pablo from Dean Trailways. Did I miss anyone from WJR that was important? Oh, our audience. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Regards, Paul W. Smith.